Blog Talk Radio.
From the far reaches of the known universe, we are proud to present Brother Harold Muhammad, soldier, scientist, scholar. Blog Talk Radio's finest. Not so mad. Science on Black Hole Radio. Black Hole Radio. Black Hole Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to the weird edition of Not So Mad Science here on the Black Hole Radio Network. A lot of things going on. We were not able to prepare a proper program for you, so we're going to replay a sequence of events that will go over a few things that we've gone over in the past, and then we'll come up to the modern time. So we're going to talk right now just how deadly the COVID-19 virus is.
Morning, folks. It's Thursday, the 6th of February. Middle of a ghost town here. 1.3 million people all hiding. It's dire here, it's very dire. There's people dropping on the footpath, literally. I can't wait to get out of here, it's terrible.
A city of 11 million people in lockdown.
So here I am sitting at home because after returning from Hubei province, at the heart of the coronavirus outbreak, everybody's told you need to go into quarantine. You can't be exposed to others for several weeks.
More than 2,000 dead, tens of thousands infected. Rising anger over how the crisis is being handled.
Local officials in Wuhan did withhold information. The doctors in Wuhan who were talking about it were explicitly told to shut up.
And scientists racing to find a vaccine.
We just don't know how this outbreak is going to develop or how many people are ultimately going to be infected or ultimately going to die from this disease.
Tonight on Four Corners, how the coronavirus outbreak sparked a global emergency.
I'm absolutely fucking petrified. The police are actually knocking on doors and taking temperatures, and if people have got a temperature, they're dragging them out. You don't get a fucking say in it. You don't get an option.
Beautiful, charming and bustling city in central China. It sits on the banks of the Yangtze River. It's a mega city. Wuhan is also home to the second most number of universities in China. People around the world come to Wuhan to study.
It's right in the heart of the country, geographically as well as economically. All these trains and planes are coming through there. And to have the virus outbreak start there, it's almost like if you wanted to pick the worst place for it to break out in, that would be the place you'd release it.
In early December, people in Wuhan begin falling ill with a mystery virus.
1st infections in Wuhan started in early December, and I believe the first case in December the 1st. When a new infectious disease appears, it does take a little time to register and become aware that it's new. So there were people presenting with a form of pneumonia.
Local doctors suspect the virus originated in the city's seafood and wildlife market.
So we think the virus probably originated from bats because that's what the genetic data tell us. But often there's an intermediary animal host. In this case, they think pangolins might be implicated, which are a mammal. And that intermediary animal host might have been at the markets. We don't think that it's from eating those things specifically, like through the gastrointestinal tract, but more from handling them, from touching the contaminated meat. So somewhere in that market, we believe there must have been a contaminated animal source that infected the first cluster of humans.
In late December, as the number of cases increases, doctors in Wuhan begin sharing information in a private chat group.
Well before any of us knew about the coronavirus, there were people who tried to sound the alarm. So there were a group of whistleblowers who'd heard that there was this virus cluster, and they started speaking about it. Now, in particular, there was one doctor, Li Wenliang. He posted on a chat group with his former university classmates that people had been coming in with what he thought was the SARS virus.
7 SARS cases were confirmed in the Huanan seafood market. The main mode of transmission of the virus is droplet transmission at close range, or contact with respiratory secretions of patients. This can cause a special pneumonia that is evidently contagious and capable of affecting multiple organ systems. It is also called SARS. The patients were isolated in the emergency department of a hospital. Everyone, please be careful. That's scary. SARS is back.
The outbreak revived the specter of SARS, another type of coronavirus, which killed 774 people in 2002 and 2003.
The reason why they would have been so concerned at the prospect that this was SARS was threefold. First of all, SARS was super infectious. Second, it had a relatively high mortality rate of 10%. And third, a large number of healthcare workers were actually died from SARS because of the complexity with stopping transmission. And I think that was the real concern.
On the same day as Dr. Lee's warning, the Wuhan Health Commission sends an urgent internal notice to hospitals on the treatment of pneumonia of unknown cause.
Some medical institutions in our city have seen patients steadily with pneumonia of unknown cause. If you find patients with unexplained pneumonia, actively adjust the resources and treat them on the spot.
The notice warns them to keep the outbreak quiet.
Without authorization, no units or individuals shall release treatment-related information to the outside. I have no doubt that local governments have reported the situation to the central government. So local governments were not accountable to the people at that time, but to the central government. They adopted the policy of concealing the truth from the public but starting to control the epidemic internally. This contradiction prevented them from properly mobilizing to deal with the spread of the epidemic.
Dr. Lee and the other doctors continued to share information.
Be careful. The WeChat group of our class has been banned. The latest news is the coronavirus infection has been confirmed, and virus classification is in progress. Please don't spread the word and ask your family and loved ones to take precautions.
Do not go to the Huanan seafood market in the near future.
So when this group of doctors, I think they were university classmates from Wuhan, began sharing the information they had about a strange new virus on this sort of joint WeChat group, they were doing what you'd expect medical professions to do, to try and sort of pool information and see what was actually happening. But of course, that's a kind of dangerous thing to do in China. I think there's little doubt right now that local officials in Wuhan did withhold information. They've admitted as much. The doctors in Wuhan who were talking about it were explicitly told to shut up.
Dr. Li and his colleagues are hauled in for questioning by Wuhan police.
After investigation and verification by the public security organs, 8 offenders have been summoned and handled according to law. The police will investigate and punish with zero tolerance those illegal acts that fabricate and spread rumors and disrupt social order.
Dr. Lee was disciplined by his own hospital. He was even picked up by the police and taken in and castigated and told not to spread rumors. This is what happens when you are saying things publicly that the Communist Party doesn't like. You're spreading rumors. Even if somebody is trying to tell the world about a potentially dangerous virus, the first instinct is to shut them up.
Despite the risk of retribution, critics like Dr. Wu Chang, who already lost his university job for defying a ban by President Xi on teaching democracy, continue to speak out over the government's handling of the crisis.
They were basically concealing the truth. Although internal controls were in place, the information kept from the public caused the outbreak of the disaster and the spread of the disease.
That's the key point in this saga. You know, they lost about 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, just when the virus was at its sort of nascent point, just at a time where they could have traced it, just at a time where perhaps they could have checked it more substantially. But that was lost because it got caught up in the politics of the information flow and information surveillance in China.
4 weeks after the first infections, China notifies the World Health Organization of the outbreak. Things are about to get worse. In early January, millions of Chinese are preparing to travel to and from Wuhan to celebrate Chinese New Year with their families.
If you were to pick the most dangerous time, the worst time for a virus to break out here, the worst time for it to spread quickly across China and even around the world, it would be the Lunar New Year. You have hundreds of millions of people crisscrossing China, traveling overseas, and because of that mass migration, the largest mass migration annually in the world, I mean, it was just a terrible time for this virus outbreak to happen.
Australian resident Ying Wang, who lives in Melbourne, is preparing to visit Wuhan with her husband and 2 children when she hears about the outbreak.
It was a couple of days after our Christmas holiday in Melbourne. I got a video sent over from my cousin in Wuhan. And according to the video, there was a suspected SARS-like pneumonia. And I asked my cousin, should I cancel my trip? We waited until probably the first week in January. And then there was an official announcement from our local government back in Wuhan saying that the disease was controllable. And then I feel relieved. So we went out with our trip.
Ying Wang and her family arrive in Wuhan on January 9. That same day, a 61-year-old man who had visited the seafood market becomes the first person to die of coronavirus. His death is kept quiet for 2 days.
During the most crucial time of the spread of disease in early Jan, Wuhan and Hubei were holding annual political meetings. As a result, the first death, which occurred on January 9, was not announced until January 11. After January 11, the data on deaths and confirmed cases plateaued and the numbers had not changed at all. I believe that the local authorities concealed the truth from the public due to political concerns.
On January 22, the government finally acknowledges the gravity of the situation at a press conference in Beijing.
The virus 疫情存在着进一步扩大的风险。当前正值春运，人员流动性激增，客观上加大了疫情传播的风险和防控的难度，绝不能掉以轻心，要高度警惕。
9 people have died and 440 people are confirmed to have contracted a mysterious coronavirus as China works to stop it spreading during the Lunar New Year travel rush.
It was 22nd of January, that was the turning point. It was Wednesday and just bad news started coming in. It started with the Chinese official news saying that it's getting much worse than they expected. And then all of a sudden, I think it was the next day, 23rd, I remember, I woke up quite late, like 10 a.m. And suddenly, my dad just told me, oh, we can't go out now. We can't go out. We can't get out of our apartment.
A dramatic development this morning in the Chinese city of Wuhan, which is the epicenter of an outbreak of a deadly new virus. All public transport, buses, trains, ferries, and the airport have been shut down as authorities scramble to contain the spread of the coronavirus.
I mean, when the authorities decided to lock down that whole province of Hubei, that's like locking down the entire population of Italy and telling them you can't leave that province. It was really the moment when everybody knew, all right, this is a big problem.
When Wuhan went into lockdown, I think January the 23rd, and then flights and greater lockdown measures across China,This is unprecedented in the history of modern medicine. We've never tried. We know that containment can work, but it's never really been done at this large scale.
The day I learned that Wuhan was in lockdown, I felt quite shocked, and I immediately started worrying about food supply, and.I had to stop everything on the day, just started messaging everybody to find out, is that really the official news? How serious is this announcement?
By late January, Wuhan's hospitals are struggling to cope. And medical staff are under intolerable pressure. With patient numbers surging, construction begins on two new hospitals, with one scheduled to open in just over a week.
Even though Chinese authorities have effectively shut down several cities, the World Health Organization says it's not yet a global health emergency.
Obviously, the whole world was watching very closely through January as this epidemic unfolded, and people were very concerned. A lot of experts were concerned and felt that the public health emergency of international concern should have been declared earlier. I think people were harking back to Ebola and what happened there, and they were afraid of delays that might have been very costly in terms of the ability to save people's lives.
Australia's first case of coronavirus has been confirmed in Victoria as New South Wales announces it has two probable cases.
So the minute we made the diagnosis of the first case in Australia, we knew how significant that was, and we knew that we wanted to culture the virus.
In a major breakthrough, Australian scientists become the first outside China to isolate the virus in a laboratory.
It's definitely growing. It started at 30, so right. That's three logs, so 1,000 times stronger.
Awesome.
So it's definitely growing.
So we've got it. Fantastic.
Yep.
CSIRO scientists begin growing the virus in their highest security laboratory, reserved for the most deadly pathogens.
We don't actually know how dangerous this virus is. We know it kills people, but we don't know how many, and we don't know exactly what the mechanism is by which this virus kills people. So at the moment, we're taking the highest level of precautions.
Our staff can only usually work about 4 hours in those suits and in those conditions, because it's very stressful to imagine you're actually working with such high volatile agents.
The most important thing that we're doing at the moment is growing the virus to produce more of it so that we can understand more about the characteristics of this virus and also how it behaves in our biological model so that we can see the progress of the disease.
So we will then introduce the virus into our test animals, on this occasion ferrets, because their respiratory system is very similar to humans. And the idea here is to understand how that infection progresses and how it behaves. This is very important for us to understand, because if we can't understand how the infection progresses and in which way it progresses, we can't understand how vaccines work.
China, the escalating number of infections prompts a rare outburst of anger online against authorities.
我请问一下他妈的，这个地球上还能找出第二个国家？是这么扯淡吗？你整个地球还能找出第二个国家，第二个政府像这个样子搞吗？现在的武汉市就他妈的跟地狱一样，看到他们倒地死亡，或者说各种情况。 那些悲剧，今天是大年初一啊，本来是一个非常高兴喜气的日子，这个时间段，但是眼下你觉得我们武汉人民或者说一个中国人能高兴得起来吗？在这次武汉肺炎过程当中，中国网民
It can be said that the more than 900 million Chinese citizens who are equipped with smartphones have been extremely dissatisfied with the situation of Wuhan pneumonia in the past 1 month or so. From my own observation, this level of dissatisfaction is unprecedented in the past 8 years. They have been tremendously dissatisfied with Wuhan local government's ineffectiveness in epidemic and disaster relief, the predicament the Wuhan people have been put into from the city lockdown, the paralysis of the local medical institutions, and the huge risk they have to face.
As authorities desperately try to stop the virus spreading, Wuhan is effectively cut off from the rest of China.
We decided to go into Hubei province to have a look what it was like right inside the virus hot zone. As we got closer and closer to Hubei, the roadblocks were becoming more serious, and in fact, looked like something out of an apocalyptic movie. The police are making all the cars pull over to the side.
Okay.
basically, that's the border that way. The police have told us that we can drive in, but we can't drive out.
We drove through a series of ghost towns. I mean, nobody on the streets, shops closed, the shutters were down. And this is during Spring Festival. Normally, this is a time when you'd have fireworks, families, friends gathering to have meals together, celebrating, being happy, and instead it was completely dead and, in fact, pretty eerie.
The outbreak of the coronavirus in China has finally been declared a global health emergency after a rapid escalation in the number of infections during the past week. There are almost 8,000 cases in 18 countries, including 9 in Australia.
So here I am sitting at home and reporting from where I live. That's because after returning from Hubei province at the heart of the coronavirus outbreak, everybody's told you need to go into quarantine. You can't be exposed to others for several weeks. This city, Beijing, if I look out the window, it's dead. I mean, there are hardly any people in the streets. Friends here don't want to go outdoors. That's because they're afraid of catching the coronavirus. And the same is happening all over the country, all these mega cities in China.
Is taking drastic action to stem the coronavirus. Foreign nationals coming from China are now banned from entering the country.
I think from a disease control point of view, we want to continue these for as long as is feasible. There's just so many major economic consequences of the travel ban that I think at some point we'll have to make the decision to lift the bans. But if we can keep them going as long as possible, that will be beneficial from a disease control point of view.
Hundreds of Australians remain trapped in Hubei province.
So this is a view from my window, and it's been really good weather today, but we're not going out. And this is our central garden at level 6. So it's a bit shame that we're stuck at home. Otherwise, it could be a really good day out. I really just want a more firm answer from anywhere, really, from WHO or my local government. So how bad really is? I'm still having this question. How serious is this whole pandemic? Even though every day we watch the numbers, infected number of people, also the death toll keep going up. I need somebody to assure me this is, I feel like the end of the world.
Morning, folks. It's Thursday, the 6th of February. Middle of a ghost down here. 1.3 million people all hiding. It's raining, it's a miserable day. Death tolls were 545 today. 16,800 odd people in hospital in my district. Waiting on DFAT to give us an answer about when I can get out of here.
Australian Tim McLean is stranded on the outskirts of Wuhan. He's trying to get his Chinese partner a visa to come to Australia.
Foreign Affairs just contacted me. I just hung up the phone. They just confirmed and wanted to let me know that my spouse, Xu Xiong, didn't make the list for the flight with Qantas and asked me if I was still interested in leaving. I informed them that I'm not leaving without her.
it's dire here. It's very dire. There's queues outside the hospitals now. We're not allowed near them. There's people dropping on the footpath, literally. Okay? I know how bad it is. I can't wait to get out of here. It's terrible.
So this is them spraying right outside our front door. They've been doing this all through the city regularly.
The local council have been going out and spraying disinfectant around everybody's doorways. So I suspect they're spraying to stop infections coming out of the sewer.
I better go in and shut the door.
I've seen medical folks turn up two doors away from me, 20 metres from my front door, and take a lady away that was infected. They also took her son. The son returned home 24 hours later. He was okay. We haven't seen or heard of the lady since.
So people have been concerned about the human rights aspects of quarantine and isolation of cases, quarantine of contacts, etc., and that's been happening on a very large scale in China, but also in Australia and other countries. From a disease control point of view, putting aside other issues, from a disease control point of view, it works.
Videos emerge on social media of authorities using increasingly drastic measures. Around China, residents post scenes claiming officials are welding the doors of apartment buildings shut so people can't get out.
I'm very concerned about getting this virus. I'm not even 100 metres away from one of the hospitals. It's full. I've seen people entering that hospital. I've seen people getting rolled out on stretchers out of that hospital. It's literally across the road from where I come out of my apartment. Now, that's concerning. My hospitals here are full. We've run out of medical supplies here. There's no PPE or personal protective equipment available anymore, so the doctors have all gone to the bigger hospitals. They're shipping our sick and our, the people that are in bad condition, they're taking them to Wuhan. The Wuhan hospitals are also full now.
By early February, the virus is in 25 countries, with 216 cases outside China.
The most likely way that the virus is travelling outside of China is by infected people. So these people, they are perhaps in the early stages of the disease and perhaps not showing very many clinical signs. So they are able to get onto planes and they're quite happy to travel. And in all innocence, they are spreading the disease as they travel.
We think probably 10% or less of all infections in China are being detected at the current time. We estimate that maybe up to 50,000 new infections a day occurring in China, which is obviously much larger than the official case numbers.
Almost 4,000 passengers, including more than 200 Australians, have spent their first 24 hours officially in quarantine on board a cruise ship off Japan. They'll be isolated on board for the next fortnight, with some passengers growing anxious as their crucial medicines are beginning to run out.
We know that cruise ships are at high risk for outbreaks. It's well documented that you get outbreaks of influenza, norovirus, gastro, and so on cruise ships. They are closed small communities in a small space compared to, say, a country. So obviously you can get more intense transmission once an outbreak starts.
Shocking news breaks that the man who had first warned of the outbreak has died of coronavirus.
In China, censors are working overtime to contain an outpouring of anger and grief over the death of the doctor who blew the whistle on the coronavirus crisis. Li Wenliang died from the virus in a Wuhan hospital 5 weeks after being punished by authorities for warning others of a dangerous new virus.
There was a huge outpouring of grief, anger, frustration on Chinese social media, and not just from so-called netizens, you know, on Chinese-style Reddit forums or something, but from the Supreme Court of China, who put out a statement saying that, you know, these doctors were heroes, they should have been allowed to do their job.
The public intellectuals and the public both realized that Dr. Li represents the conscience of China. He was suppressed from the beginning from telling the truth. He could have saved the livelihood of tens of thousands of people, or thousands of people's lives. But all this was concealed due to the authority suppression of free speech. I believe the public expressed their dissatisfaction with the government by commemorating him.
The death toll reaches a critical milestone, overtaking the numbers killed by SARS. After being conspicuously absent, President Xi emerges on state media to assert his authority.
Xi has really lost control of the narrative, and he's struggling to get it back. Now, if that goes on, if they don't get on top of the virus, then that can really damage Xi's image, I think, even with ordinary Chinese people. And that has potentially profound implications, because 2-3 years down the track, when he's meant to be reappointed, maybe his enemies will use this against him.
So the people directed this kind of dissatisfaction directly to Xi himself and Xi's style of governance, which is, I believe, the most serious threat to Xi Jinping. This is because the foundation of his power is based largely on populism, and the loss of this populist foundation will undoubtedly destabilize his position in the party.
Australians still trapped in the coronavirus epicentre in China are tonight preparing for a second attempt at an evacuation flight to Darwin.
there is a seat available for my partner Sean and myself on the next available flight out of Wuhan, which apparently is leaving at midnight tonight. We've got 3 or 4 hours to get to the airport. They've sent us all our passes, etc., so we can get through the checkpoints. It's all confirmed. We've got the emails. We've got the thumbs up. So we're out of here. We're heading home. Can't wait. And super excited.
Today is our last day in Wuhan. It's been pretty long journey, really, in the past 2 weeks. More than 2 weeks. We've been house quarantined for more than 2 weeks. So tomorrow we're going to get out and go to the airport and come back to Australia. So it's still unreal for me. Toll gate, so it looks like we're going through a checkpoint. It's 2:30, kids are not asleep. I'm super tired. We're still waiting, about half of the plane, still waiting to be cleared of security and passport control and stuff. A lot of paperwork, a lot of screening, a lot of questions. Just very, very stressful, really.
We're out of here.
Yes, we're out of here, going home.
Tim McLean isn't on the flight. Quarantine restrictions mean he hasn't been able to get any transport to the airport, so he's still stuck in Hubei province.
I'm absolutely fucking petrified now. 1,300 odd people are dead here. The police are actually knocking on doors and taking temperatures, and if people have got a temperature, they're dragging them out, mate. You don't get a fucking say in it. You don't get an option. You get taken away and put with a bunch of other sick people. Not only are we in quarantine, but it's beyond quarantine now. It's, I don't even know what to call it. It's quite terrifying knowing that people can knock on your door here and just drag you out for no reason at all because you've got a temperature.
At the moment, we don't have a good understanding of the real mortality rate for the novel coronavirus. It's estimated about 2%. So if the mortality rate's 2%, if it's 1%, even if it's 0.5%, and 300 million people get infected, that's a lot of people that could potentially die. Because if you think back into the Spanish flu, enormous numbers of people died, but the actual mortality rate was less than 1%, but a huge number of people were infected.
Health Organization is this morning warning the coronavirus could pose a greater global threat than terrorism.
A virus can have more powerful consequences than any terrorist action. And that's true. And if the world doesn't want to wake up and consider this enemy virus as public enemy number one, I don't think we will learn from our lessons.
We just don't know what this
how this outbreak is going to develop or how many people are ultimately going to be infected or ultimately going to die from this disease. We don't yet know exactly how the virus is evolving. We don't know how many people are actually infected that are not revealed to be infected, and we don't know how many people are dying that are misdiagnosed as dying from other disease. So this is a real problem for us to be able to make any real prediction or to model the spread of this disease.
I think the worst case scenario is that we are unable to contain the virus, that we see sustained human-to-human transmission in many parts of the world.
The World Health Organization says the window of opportunity to contain the coronavirus outbreak is narrowing. The statement comes as concerns grow in South Korea and the Middle East about the number of cases. There have also been more cases confirmed among Australians evacuated from a cruise ship in Japan.
So I really don't know what the near future is going to bring. We've got no information about how long we're going to be in here. There's no indication whatsoever. I've got sick people living next door to me. I've got sick people above me. I've got sick people across the lane from me. Some of those people have got chains on their doors so people can't access them because they're ill. I'm hiding from a virus that you can't see and a government that you don't want to muck around with.
Okay, coronavirus. Everybody's talking about coronavirus. Well, viruses come in families. So there's a herpes family. There's a coronavirus family. There's an influenza family of viruses. And so coronaviruses are generally considered to be animal viruses. When you look a little deeper, you find coronaviruses inhabit parasites that are in the bodies of animals. So therefore, in livestock industries, they have a big coronavirus problem because you can get things like feedlot fever among cattle, sheep, but especially pigs and other domestic animals that are not necessarily so clean. So that's a big problem. Coronaviruses infect animals. Sometimes you may get a human infection with coronavirus. That's somewhat rare. Some of the common colds that people have had are due to coronaviruses. Generally speaking, they have not proven to be extremely fatal. However, what we're dealing with now, the novel coronavirus, COVID-20, this is not a natural coronavirus. This is a genetically engineered, weaponized version of coronavirus that has been married to 4 genes from HIV and probably other genes from perhaps other viral pathogens. The short history is Dr. Lieber of Harvard University, the chief biomolecular scientist at Harvard University, dug up some frozen bodies from the tundra in Alaska. This was maybe 3 or 4 years ago, to investigate what killed them during the Spanish flu epidemic. He isolated that virus from 100 years ago and resurrected it, you could say. But found out that because of the frozen conditions over time, the virus had lost its infectivity. You may question, why would somebody dig up a virus that killed over 100 million people and brought an end to World War I? Well, you would have to ask Dr. Lieber that. But he did that, and then when the infectivity was not what he wanted, then he paired it with 4 genes from HIV and perhaps some other things. And now you have a highly contagious coronavirus that is infecting human beings. and not only from animal to human transmission, but now verified cases, human to human transmission through the air. So you could say that this coronavirus 2020 is the descendant of the MERS virus, the Middle Eastern respiratory virus that killed many people in the Middle East, and the SARS virus that I think that goes back to 2003-2004 that killed many, many people. Now, the SARS virus was the first indication to the Chinese people that someone was out to get them. The SARS virus was genetically engineered to infect Asian people, preferably. And the Chinese realized this. And so since that time, they have actually been on the defensive. Now the question is whether this latest virus is also a bioweapon engineered to destroy people of Asian descent. And it seems to have another feature. It seems to preferentially infect men as opposed to women. Seems to be much more lethal in men than women. And even though it's considered to be a respiratory virus that causes a respiratory illness, the other interesting factor is that it seems to have a predilection for male testicles. And even in those that recover, the question is, will they be sterilized as after this COVID infection, even if they survive? Bill Gates, along with Dr. Lieber and Johns Hopkins University in October of 2019, conducted a simulation, computer simulation, of a coronavirus outbreak, and they determined through computer simulations that such an outbreak would lead to the death of 65 million people. Now, the current experience in China with a 2.3% mortality rate shows that globally we could expect at least 165 million deaths from this virus. So what is it all for? I think it's for the purpose of slowing down the growth of China as a dominant economic, political, and economic power in the world. That is, of course, if it really is a bioweapon. If it's not really a bioweapon, it certainly has taken the U.S.-China trade war to another level. Trade war has become biological warfare, and people are being targeted with their lives. Part of the trade war, of course, was the controversy with a company called Huawei, the leaders in 5G technology. The center of 5G technology is China, and the center of 5G technology in China is Wuhan City, or Hubei, in Hubei province. And when they turned on or switched on the most potent 5G network in the world, in Wuhan City, that's when the epidemic broke out. So there are scientists who think that there is an electronic component to what would otherwise just be a biological phenomenon. A virus is on the borderline of living things versus non-living things. It is protein wrapped around genetic material, either RNA or DNA. It is susceptible to electronic frequencies. Viruses can be activated by 5G 60 cycle frequency radiation that was turned on in Wuhan City that just coincidentally happened at the same time as a viral outbreak. Could there be a connection? One final point that I think the world should consider. From my point of view as a medical doctor, someone who knows a little bit about public health, I don't think that the Chinese government could be faulted in any way for their response to whatever happened, whether it was a natural phenomenon or whether it turns out to really be a bio attack. But their response to it was heroic and correct. They built 3 1,000-bed hospitals in a little more than a week. That is phenomenal. They provided hospital care for thousands of people who otherwise would have been left out in the cold to die. And so this is something to ponder. Is the United States capable of the same response, public health-wise? Is Europe capable of the same response? Is Africa, is India, are the other nations, are Brazil and other nations in South America? and throughout the world? Is Japan, Korea, are they capable of the same heroic, monumental public health measures undertaken by the Chinese, who seem, I mean, optimistically I'm speaking now, they seem to have contained the spread of the virus in China through these drastic means. But suppose you had the same level of infection in New York City or Los Angeles or Chicago or some other major city in Europe, as we now see in Italy and Spain and Germany, cases breaking out. Well, this is the tip of the iceberg. 80-some cases now in Long Island, New York, in Los Angeles, in Texas, and other places. People under quarantine. We don't know how many people are really infected because the CDC has only given a little more than 400 tests total. So if they're reporting 50 or 60 cases, that sounds like a small number, and it is, but you'd only tested 400 people. So how can you be sure about the total number of infections in the country? You can't be. So all precautions must be in order. Facial masks are not going too far. Frequent hand washing is not going too far. Avoiding contact with public surfaces is not going too far. Avoiding public gatherings is not going too far. We don't actually know the full characteristics of what we're dealing with, but we must take those things into consideration that we are learning, you know, where these outbreaks are taking place throughout the world. A weak Clorox solution, a cap full of Clorox in a gallon of water, can be used as a disinfectant on surfaces. I use essential oils mixed in water, things like geranium and other essential oils, eucalyptus, camphor, these essential oils mixed in water, sprayed in a house will keep germs at bay. These are old-fashioned, traditional methods. I think the public health service in America is so decrepit and disabled that every American citizen should consider you're on your own. And you have to do what you can do to protect yourself and your family because I don't think that the government agencies are going to be able. They're not equipped. The hospitals don't have the space to accommodate you. So you're going to have to accommodate yourself. Well, the question about whether or not this COVID-20 coronavirus is natural or man-made, I think that the fact that it is man-made is beyond question right now. I think the genetic sequences that have been done throughout the world shows that it did not have a natural origin. You can't naturally combine HIV genes with coronavirus genes. That just doesn't happen in nature. However, nature is capable of things that we may not be able to conceive of. So, for example, one of the things that people are becoming aware of are the tremendous number of deaths that take place every year from ordinary influenza. In the United States, for example, every year you will have between 30 and 40,000 deaths from regular influenza, and that's considered to be normal. And it could even range higher than that, 60, 70,000 per year, and some years lower than that. So we have good seasons and bad seasons. This is from influenza. Well, where did the influenza virus come from? I'm using this as an example for all viruses. Where did they come from? Well, if you have, as you do in China, a situation where you have population congestion, you have human beings living in close proximity with animals. You have human beings living in close proximity to pigs and ducks and chickens. And so the history of influenza is that this is a virus that naturally recombined to produce something that can cause human disease. A bird virus infects a duck in a pond in China. That bird virus gets picked up by a pig who drinks from that pond water. And then that virus recombines inside the body of the pig, so that it begins to infect the pig. A bird virus, in other words, has now jumped into a pig. And then who lives right next to the pig, or who ends up eating the pig or slaughtering the pig, is a human being. And so now an original bird virus that somehow was able to infect a pig now makes a second leap, species leap, you could say, into a human being. And now a bird virus that became a swine virus is now a human virus, and we call it influenza. And it has been plaguing the world ever since people thought it was a good idea to live in close proximity to a food source like ducks and pigs. So it's possible, it's remotely possible, that this novel coronavirus is a natural virus, like they say. It came from a meat market in China. It came from bats. It came from this. It came from that. Well, that sounds like the green monkey story related to HIV. And then it turns out green monkeys had very little to do with HIV. Human biomolecular engineers had everything to do with the development of HIV as a biological weapon. And I think that the evidence is very strong right now, and I think the proof positive will come in the future. This was a biologically engineered weapon, probably done by Dr. Lieber and his team from Harvard University in conjunction with Johns Hopkins University and with Wuhan University in China and other government agencies in China. They developed this. They will have to explain to the world why they thought this was such a good idea to do.
Just moments ago, the death toll climbing to 105 cases across the United States. Six people have died, all in Washington state, four of them residents of a nursing care facility near Seattle. Tonight, more firefighters in that area have been put into quarantine after responding to coronavirus calls at the facility. We'll go there live in just a moment. At the White House, President Trump defending the administration's response. Vice President Mike Pence, in the first of what he says will be daily briefings from his coronavirus task force, called this an all-hands-on-deck effort. We begin our special coverage. CNN's Nick Watt in Los Angeles. So, Nick, some major developments tonight.
Yeah, there have been. Listen, Anderson, up until this point, the focus has really been on the west coast of this country. 20 confirmed cases here in California, 3 in Oregon, and 18 up there in Washington state. But just within the past hour, we have heard of one more case from Massachusetts, somebody who'd been on a school trip to Italy, and two more cases in Georgia. Those people were told are being held in isolation in their home while authorities try to make sure that they weren't in contact with other members of the community before their diagnosis. But you mentioned that White House task force this afternoon. The one message that came loud and clear out of that, Anderson, there will be more cases here in the United States.
Six now dead in Washington state. Four of them elderly residents of this nursing home near Seattle. At least 48 schools now closed across the state for deep cleaning, and a warning from the governor.
We think folks should begin to think about avoiding large events and assemblies.
Today, nationwide, we topped 100 known cases across 12 states. Known is the key word. There are likely many more.
Right now, today, on this day, Monday, if you look at the country as a whole, the risk is low.
But the virus is now spreading within American communities.
The degree of risk has the potential to change quickly.
Today, the first confirmed case in New York, the nation's most populous city.
There is no doubt that there will be more cases. This is New York. We're a gateway to the world.
Travel restrictions are now in place to and from some global hotspots.
We'll ensure that anyone traveling on a direct flight to the United States of America receives multiple screenings at all airports in Italy and South Korea.
But of course, the virus is here already, and the enhanced testing that will be going on in the next week or two will help us define exactly the nature and extent of the problem that's here already.
Earlier in this outbreak, criticism, not enough test kits, too few labs, that we're told is changing.
The estimates that we're getting from industry right now, by the end of this week, close to 1 million tests will be able to be performed.
But one growing concern, what to do with those who've tested positive or the potentially infected? Up in Seattle, the county is buying a motel to isolate them. And after that deadly outbreak at the nursing home.
And we have two police officers and 27 firefighters that are currently in quarantine because each of them responded to an incident at the Life Care Center in the past 2 weeks.
Tonight, the city of San Antonio suing the federal government after an evacuee from Wuhan, held in quarantine at a nearby base, was released and later tested positive. This judge just issued an emergency order.
Anyone coming out of there, which is 120 of them left, come out into the county, that we will prohibit that, and the sheriff's office will detain them if that were to happen.
The plan going forward for the country?
Prepare for the worst, hope for the best.
And a promise from the White House task force to keep us informed.
We'll be back here every day. Get used to seeing us.
Interestingly, we just got the White House scheduled for tomorrow. They will be having one of those briefings, but Anderson, it will not be on camera. Now, testing is going to be the key going forward. Interesting thing about this virus, for 80% of people who get it, it's pretty mild or asymptomatic, which in one sense is good news, but it makes it harder to contain. There could be many people walking around right now. They don't know they've got it. They are shedding that virus and infecting other people who might be affected more badly than they were. So the testing will be key, and that is going to be rolling out within the next few days, we are told.
Nick, I appreciate it. Earlier in the program, I believe I misspoke. I just want to be clear. There are 105 cases in the United States, known cases of people who are infected. There have been 6 deaths in Washington state, 6 deaths total in America, more than 105 cases, more than 105 people known to be infected. Where are we on this big picture?
Well, I mean, you know, the numbers do continue to grow. I think people are hearing, some people are sort of hearing about this, waking up to this now for the first time because it's sort of been plodding along, and then we're starting to see this increase in numbers, and obviously, sadly, the increase in deaths as well. Public health officials, they anticipated this. This is not a surprise to them, despite how much has been going on in China for some time. The idea that eventually this virus, which, you know, doesn't respect boundaries or borders, it's a little strand of RNA, was going to come across the oceans and travel around the world, that was sort of known. What I think is going to be interesting now, because what's going to happen this week is a lot of tests are finally going to go out. And I know we're going to talk about testing. There's been inadequate testing. But when this testing goes out, I think we're going to see a sudden jump in numbers.
Because there's a lot of folks who may be asymptomatic, who are not showing signs
That's
of
right.
having it.
That's right. And so it's bad news, good news. Bad news because people are going to hear about this sudden increase in numbers. But I think it's also going to be reflective of that point exactly, that there's a lot of people out there who did not, you know, get particularly sick with this. And if you look at the data, some 80% of people really don't have much in the way of symptoms.
Yeah. I want to please tell me that Vice President Pence said today.
Let's be clear. The risk to the American people of the coronavirus remains low, according to all of the experts that we're working with across the government. And as the president has said, we're ready for anything, but this is an all-hands-on-deck effort.
So, Zeke, you hear them saying it's an all-hands-on-deck effort. What does that actually entail? I mean, how is this being combated? I talked to the governor there in Washington. Who's in charge in Washington for efforts there? Is it the CDC? Is it the
Well, government? You need more than the CDC. The CDC has one slice of the activity, but you also need the FDA because you need to have drugs and approval of devices and approval of any therapeutics that you're going to use. Homeland Security has to be involved. The State Department is going to be involved if you're going to have travel restrictions and transportation restrictions. And the other thing that you really need that I have yet to really see is you need connection to the states and localities. That's where the front line is,
right?
Because the CDC is in Atlanta and they can send teams out. But the first reports are going to go to the local public health officials, to the state public health officials, and then back to the CDC in Atlanta. So the all hands on deck really requires a lot of coordination and keeping everyone in step, and that everyone includes all the states. As you heard, the governor, Inslee, you know, deciding about when to close schools,
right.
You know, what to do with the quarantine, how to manage the surge that they might need on hospitals. All of those things are happening very locally. And so you need Washington to coordinate that. When we were doing H1N1 swine flu, we were on the phone to local health officials every day,
right,
and multiple times of the day.
Jennifer, I mean, the governor made an interesting point, which is that the front line of this is individual citizens and families who, you know, are monitoring their own health, their family's health, and they are the ones who will be able to prevent the spread of this from spreading even farther with a greater reach.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm really glad that he made the point about not just kind of showing up at the emergency room. I think that could be the worst thing that we could see happening.
Explain why.
Well, I mean, first of all, we want to reserve hospital resources for the people who need it, the severely ill patients. This could play out such that we have more patients than we could possibly handle, and we don't want to clog emergency rooms and other facilities with people who are just mildly ill,
right,
or just want to get
right. That's my concern, is that emergency rooms are going to be flooded with people saying, I have a cough, can I get a test? And first of all, the governor is saying they can do 200 a day right now, but that's really not going to be enough if this, in fact, grows. Is this a Homeland Security issue? Because, you know, earlier in the weeks, we saw Joe Kennedy going after the acting head of Homeland Security, who seemed surprised that he considered it part of Homeland Security, and clearly, fairly or not, the acting head of Homeland Security didn't seem to think it was part of his purview.
Well, of course it's part of his purview. It's a whole of government effort, or it ought to be, right? Homeland Security has a piece of this, but obviously Health and Human Services, CDC, the State Department, foreign aid should come into this, right? The most effective thing we can do to protect ourselves from pandemic disease is to defend forward, as I've described it, which is to help and assist other countries and to prevent that those diseases before they get to our shores. So this has to be a whole of government effort, which is why it's got to be coordinated out of the White House.
Yeah.
All of what the gaps that Zeke was talking about, that Jennifer was talking about, those are gaps that the White House ought to be identifying by working tightly and very closely with state and local officials. So I served in the White House during the Ebola epidemic, right? And we convened regularly conference calls and discussions with state and local public health officials. What are the gaps that they were seeing? What assistance did they need? And then helping to coordinate that very, very quickly. That's got to be done out of the White House across the government.
Right.
As a boy, I shared a game with my father. Played it every morning till I was 3. He would knock on my door, and I'd pretend to be asleep till he got right next to the bed. Then I would get up and jump into his arms. Good morning, Papa. And my Papa, he would tell me that he loved me. We shared a game, knock, knock. Until that day when the knock never came. And my mama takes me on a ride past cornfields on this never-ending highway till we reach a place of high, rusty gates. A confused little boy, I enter the building, carried in my mama's arms. Knock, knock. We reach a room of windows and brown faces. Behind one of the windows sits my father. I jump out of my mama's arms and run joyously towards my papa's, only to be confronted by this window. I knock, knock, trying to break through the glass, trying to get to my father. I knock, knock, as my mama pulls me away before my papa even says a word. And for years, he has never said a word. And so 25 years later, I write these words for the little boy in me who still awaits his papa's knock. Papa, come home, because I miss you. Miss you waking me up in the morning and telling me you love me. Papa, come home, because there's things I don't know, and I thought maybe you could teach me how to shave, how to dribble a ball, how to talk to a lady, how to walk like a man. Papa, come home, because I decided a while back I want to be just like you, but I'm forgetting who you are. And 25 years later, a little boy cries, and so I write these words and try to heal and try to father myself, and I dream up a father who says the words my father did not, dear son. I'm sorry I never came home. For every lesson I failed to teach, hear these words. Shave in one direction with strong, deliberate strokes to avoid irritation. Dribble the page with the brilliance of your ballpoint pen. Walk like a god, and your goddess will come to you. No longer will I be there to knock on your door, so you must learn to knock for yourself. Knock, knock down doors of racism and poverty that I could not. Knock, knock on doors of opportunity for the lost brilliance of the black men who crowd these cells. Knock, knock with diligence for the sake of your children. Knock, knock for me, for as long as you are free, these prison gates cannot contain my spirit. The best best of me still lives in you. Not with the knowledge that you are my son, but you are not my choices. Yes, we are our father's sons and daughters, but we are not their choices. For despite their absences, we are still here, still alive, still breathing, with the power to change this world, one little boy and girl at a time. Knock, who's there? We are.
And that brings us to the end of the strange edition of Not So Mad Science here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Once again, we thank you for taking the time to share with us, because we are just in a weird time right now. We were just unprepared and unable to do the type of quality show that you deserve. But do not take it that we forgot about you. We just found ourselves in a most peculiar position today, one to which we have yet still recover from. So to that end, I say to you one and all, we love you. We love you. We love you. 020999. Assalamu alaikum. Allah willing, we will be back with you next week with competent, consistent content. Keep the faith, baby. Keep the faith.